they wore. And I literally get goosebumps talking about it. And I think like that is the legacy. That is the proto Big Black Banner. Like that's and then we saw, you know, a few weeks after they used the Big Black Banner in Hamilton, they used it in Calgary. And it was very successful there as well. And I am so invigorated by looking to the past. I spend a lot of time looking at archives because I'm convinced that we don't have to figure it all out for ourselves again today. And that there are answers in the past, which is not to like do a rose colored glasses and think that like everybody always agreed on strategy and tactics and there was never any leftist infighting or anything. Like, but there are things that we can learn from, and strategy is one of them. So it is very important to me that that is understood about this, that what we put in the Guide for Pride Defenders, none of it is novel information. All of it is taken from other people in different times and places who have used similar strategies and had to think about similar strategies. Like women, cis women, trans women, have always had to think about who am I leaving with and who am I getting there with and how am I taking public transit? And like that's always been a thing. So the Pride Defense Guide draws on this lineage of activism. And
well, it warms my heart, as they say, to hear the angels over the funerals referenced. Thank you so much, Hazel. I cannot encourage folks enough. Antihate.ca, that's all it is. You can find it super easily. Go check out the Pride Guide, easy to find on the website. And again, Hazel, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Luke.
We'll be back just after this.
Back when I was young, I knew.
Welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith. Sebastian is still recovering from his eye surgery and would certainly have struggled to see the data that I have been looking at over the last couple of days. I'm very excited to be joined by Warren Silver from Stats Canada to give us a bit of really invaluable insight into the numbers that got released. Now, at the top of the show, we mentioned to our audience some of the big picture numbers, you know, sexual orientation, hate crimes up 12% year over year. Hate crimes as a whole up 7% year over year. But I think the really headline one is from 2019 to 2022, sort of post-pandemic, hate crimes up a cumulative rise of 83%. Pretty astonishing numbers. Are these numbers as dramatic as they sound?
So I would say yes. I mean, 83% is a pretty significant increase when we look at anything. And we know that hate crime is a very serious issue in Canada. Since the pandemic, we have seen a lot more police-reported incidents. One thing that I do always like to put context to the numbers to better understand is to just talk for a minute about how much goes unreported. So every 5 years, Statistics Canada does a survey on victimization called the General Social Survey, where we go across the country asking people if they've been a victim of crime, and if so, did they report it to police? And if they didn't report it to police, why did they not report it to police, for example? And within that survey, there are specific questions around hate crime. So we ask them, do you feel you were targeted because of your sexual orientation, your race, ethnicity, your religion, etc.? So we know that from that data, only less than a third of incidents will be reported to police. So I think it's in the neighborhood of about 29%. So when we look at the police reported data, we have to bear in mind that many of these incidents never come to the attention of police. So one of the things that might be affecting better reporting is if people are more aware and willing to come forward, it could be that there are more hate crimes happening, or it could be that there are more victims willing to report to police, mm-hmm. and that police are working actively with communities to get better reporting. So it's always important in context to keep in mind that that might be an issue. So I know, for example, people will sometimes point out, why does this one city have so many more incidents? And when I look at their activity, I see, well, they have a hate crime unit, community outreach. They're working with the 2S LGBTQIA plus community. They're working with, you know, other communities. That might result in higher numbers, too. Mm-hmm. So the numbers on their own, I think, are they are significant, but there are many things that can contribute to why numbers are increasing.
I was talking to Sebastian about this yesterday, and I said how dramatically they'd increased. And he asked a very good question that I think everybody's going to be asking. It's like, okay, well, you know, what is it that has increased? And I think it's worth clarifying for our audience here that these are crime statistics. These are not, you know, somebody yelled at me and I felt a bit uncomfortable. There was a police case with a number and a court and you know, these are as demonstrable as you can get in terms of the data. I think you bring up a really interesting point. So I get the sense then, if we are going to know whether or not there is just more reporting with police compared to just more hate crimes, we're going to have to wait for that social survey to give us that ratio again. I think the last one was a couple of years ago, so I don't know if it's on the agenda.
Yeah. Yes, it goes out every 5 years. So the last one was 2019, meaning that this calendar year they're going out again to ask people about their experiences. So once we have that, we'll be able to know if that gap is kind of closing. But you're right when you mentioned that these are criminal incidents. So every one of these incidents that is reported to us by police has been investigated by police, substantiated by police, and police say this is a criminal incident and not just, as you mentioned, discrimination or some other type of lesser action that could still be hurtful, but is not a crime. So these are crimes. And I was looking at the data in the tables, and especially when we're talking about anti-sexual orientation incidents, it's interesting to note that these tend to be the most violent of the incidents that we see. So more of them are violent than non-violent, meaning that they're mostly like assaults versus, say, graffiti or mischief. Whereas in other types of hate crime, the anti-race ethnicity ones, anti-religious ones, other types, they tend to be more likely non-violent incidents. So, you know, not only are they increasing, but they're also, they're more violent.
One of the trends that I spotted, which I thought was really quite interesting, and I'm sure you saw it as well, and that is the average profile of somebody who's been a victim of these hate crimes. Now, it was noted that it's predominantly men across the board, but what really jumped out at me was that for sexual orientation hate crimes, it seems to skew younger, that it is typically younger men compared to other types of hate crimes that are being targeted.
Yes, that's very true. So they are among the youngest. And, you know, we do in the daily, which I sent you, there's a link to, we do have a section specifically on victims. And one of the things I think is interesting is when you look at, the hate crimes that are occurring and the ages, I think there it is in the third paragraph, the number of children and youth victims. So we're talking from the age of 0 to 17 because they're youth under the criminal code, mm-hmm. Increased 198%. So that's from 2019 to 2022. So that is a huge increase. So we know that young people are very involved in hate crimes, both as victims and as accused. And that's why one of the reasons that I think it's important we publish this information and why we try to work with journalists such as yourself and try and get the information out is because the more information we have, the more we can do to maybe address hate crime. So understanding this might help government, police, or others promote programs or look at where they can target. So specifically, 198% increase in just 3 years of youth and children, it's quite high.
Yeah, it's really quite disturbing. And I think for our listeners here, I just want to be very, very clear and reiterate this stat in another way. For people under the age of 17, now everyone who's listening, driving in their car, listening to the podcast, knows of somebody under the age of 17. As a total number, those victims of hate crimes went from 99, just under 100, to just under 300 victims.
Yes, 295. And those are criminal incidents. So that doesn't even take into account bullying and other harassment that is non-criminal in nature. So these are the most severe. And so criminal incidents increased 198% in those 3 years.
And we mentioned earlier that only, maybe about 29% are reporting. We need to wait for the social survey to confirm what that ratio is for these data set years. But it does beg the question that, our youth, 17 and under, this is a very concerning increase. I hope that folks listening will have conversations with their children, with the young folks and their families about, about this topic, because the data here is really quite quite worrying. One of the things that came up that I thought was quite interesting, we've talked a lot about the increase in hate crimes against trans folks. Typically, we're talking about reported cases in the media, individual cases in Canada where we know the identity of the folks being trans. This data wasn't able to pull that out. Now, I do know that how that data was collected changed in, I think, 2021.
Yes.
We also know that Stats Canada is very fastidious in terms of data accuracy and not revealing individual cases if there's too few in numbers. So we understand it may not be possible. But why was it that we can't put a finger on how many trans folks were victims of hate crimes?
So that's a very good question. So prior to 2021, what we did was we collected this data in two different categories. So we had sexual orientation and we had sex or gender. So within the sexual orientation category, there was detailed motivation for bisexual, heterosexual, homosexual, gay, lesbian, and other sexual orientation. Within sex and gender, there's detailed motivation for male, female, and other sex gender, which included transgender, agender, intersexed, for example. So it's not really possible to disaggregate. We can say which ones are other gender. But we realize that, what we try to do at StatsCan is regularly we go back and look at our surveys and look at what needs improvement. So this rolled out the survey in 2000 and the consulting work happened in 2004. And we rolled it out in 2005, publishing first in like 2006. So it had been like 15, almost 20 years. So what we did was we did a very detailed consultation where we went out to academics, communities. We spoke directly with representatives from different 2S LGBTQIA plus communities, as well as, a Black community, Muslim community, Jewish community, different, to ask about like the statistics we have, are they useful? What do they use them for? How can we improve them, for example? And from that, there came the recommendation that we really needed to be much more specific when it came to anti-transgender incidents. So as a result, we did update our survey. And as you mentioned, that rolled out in October of 2021. So the updated categories specifically state under gender. So we keep gender separate from orientation because we look at orientation, as you know, as who you're attracted to versus gender as how somebody identifies. Mm-hmm. So under gender, we have it now specified for man or woman, transgender man or transgender woman, or transgender target not specified, and non-binary, all as separate categories. Mm-hmm. So it's better to collect it at the more detailed level. We can always roll up if we need to talk about how many anti-transgender incidents there are. But if we get it at the most detailed level, then we can also, especially when we have several years of data, be able to do more analysis on that. So this rolled out October 2021, and many police services have already switched on to the newer version. Here in British Columbia, where I live, the entire province is switching on in April onto this new version. So if you think about it, it's a little bit like when your computer updates to Windows, 2014 or something. So not everybody switches right away. So there can be a gradual, lag, but we're getting more and more police services switching on to this. So as they do, they'll be able to report using these detailed motivations. And we're doing training with police around that to make sure that it's properly collected. Another important update to the survey was we're now allowing for more than one motivation, which was something that was told to us when we did these consultations to really try to address intersectionality. so that we'll be able to, in the future, report on those instances where a person might be Asian and gay or Black and Muslim. And so that, I think, will be really interesting, and we'll be able to do that. So we're one of the first countries, along with France and the Netherlands, that are starting to collect information on intersectionality. And I think once we have the data, it'll really show that there are overlaps between people's different identities.
I mean, on the one hand, I am very excited. Our show, we get quite excited about academic studies and detailed reports. It's kind of it's one of our favorite things, like brown paper packages tied up in string. But at the same time, I'm thinking about how, although this data will be really interesting, it is so important to not lose track of the human that's behind it and the individual that is each one of these numbers. I did want to talk about two other elements. And that is that, from what I can see here, about 86% of the people accused of these crimes, the perpetrators of these crimes, were themselves men and boys. What does that information say to you in terms of how high a ratio that is?
Men and boys are generally overrepresented in crime in general, but it is higher in hate crime. And so, again, I just hope that that's information that can be useful to police, to government, to communities when planning programs. So, I'm a big believer that this data is important. I think data helps stop hate, because the more we shine a light on it and the more we better understand it, the more we can do. And I think that the more you understand who's perpetrating these crimes, the more that we can look at prevention measures or programs or things. Now, that's outside the mandate of StatsCan. Our mandate is really just to inform. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I do feel like the data, it's important to keep track of that. These are people. These are individual victims. And, in the training that we're doing with police, we really do try to focus on that and look at, like, using a victim-centered approach, trauma-informed and culturally responsible when we're dealing with victims. And we do talk about, how hate crime affects victims differently than other types of crimes, and, how they can, for example, maybe be a better ally and help victims of 2SLGBTQIA+, how they can better support in certain things.
I mean, it's hard to have a silver lining on a topic about hate crimes, but there is one in particular I want to draw our audience attention to, and that is that hate crimes against religions are down by about 15%, with one very strong caveat, and that is hate crimes against the Jewish community are up by about 2%, 10 more incidents compared to the year previous. But that, at least, I think is encouraging, that at least some crimes are down.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that these data are from 2022. So this was before the conflicts really started, in the recent conflicts in the Middle East. So that data will probably be reflected in next year's report. So when we get the data, it takes quite a while, because we verify every incident. We send it through all kinds of confirmation and validation exercises and programs, and we go back and forth with every police service and have their police service, have a chance to verify and sign off on the data. Mm-hmm. So that by the time we publish the data, we're very certain of the quality. And then once we do that, we have to, do all the analysis that we can, and we try to look at, small numbers need to be suppressed and all that. So it does take a while until we're able to give a report like this. And so I suspect, because of all of the issues that are going on, that anti-religious hate crimes might rise. next year. But as you mentioned, yeah, they are down in 2022, with the exception of the anti-Jewish incidents, which rose by 2%. It's also important when we look at these populations, we do have a lot of information from the census at StatsCan. We can link to other data sources. So we know, for example, you know, the Jewish population is from the latest census is 0.9% of the population. So with it being one of the smaller percentages, you know, the Muslim population, for example, 4.9%, I believe, and we have larger percentages now, Buddhist, Hindu, Sikh, lots of other. So when we have numbers this high with populations this small, it means that we still see anti-Jewish incidents as being one of the highest numbers, and as a rate, it means that it is affecting this community probably disproportionately more, at least in 2022. But as I said, I suspect with everything going on, we'll have to wait to see. There's probably going to be more incidents reported in you know, the next year's report.
Well, I hope that folks listening who have been a victim of a crime that they believe is hate motivated, or a victim of a crime in general, to go and report it to the police and, you know, go through that process. Thank you so much, Warren, for your time in kind of talking through this data. You know, the big headline number seems quite intimidating, but I think your insight has been invaluable in sort of grounding the conversation. I sincerely hope that the folks listening will have conversations with particularly, but not exclusively, the young men in their lives about hate crimes. And for my own peers, men around the age of 33, the largest group of perpetrators, we need to buck our ideas, to say the very least, and not be as hateful. Sorry. Is there any passing or final comments you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, thank you. I mean, I think it's important that we talk about these, and this is why we put the work into the report to try to get this information out there. So thank you.
And sadly, that is all we have time for today. Just to see us out, Sebastian has rejoined us. Hello, Sebastian.
Hello.
We are playing out with the Swiss entry for Eurovision. This is not a Canadian song. We nearly always play Canadian music by LGBTQ-identified Canadians, with the exception of Eurovision. And this is the Swiss entry. It is very Eurovision. We love it. And we'll be back next week. I've been Luke Smith.
I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Welcome to the show. Let everybody know I'm done playing the game. I'll break out of the chains. You better buckle up. I'll pour another cup. This is my boy. So drink it up, my friend. About life, but the good and the bad, better hold on tight. What is nice, what's wrong, what's right? Everything is balanced, everything's light. I got so much on my mind, and I've been awake all night. I'm so pumped, I'm so psyched, it's bigger than me. I'm getting so hyped, like, let me taste the lows and highs. Let me feel that burning fright. Between the O's and the 1's.